Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
This is the April 30 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our guests today include Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Steve Freed of ADM Investor Services out of Chicago, Illinois, and Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Again, the web address, willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Now let's begin our conversation, as we always do, with a list of topics we should cover for today. Let's start with you, Ellen Dearden.
I think the dollar is probably the number one topic as far as I'm concerned. It's continued to slide. It has not lifted exports of grain, but I think it's probably been supportive on the meats. The second thing is we're going to look forward to the May 12th USDA report, particularly from a wheat standpoint, to see if frost damage has been as widespread as some of the reports that we're getting.
Dale Durkles, your thoughts?
Well, I think right now, to follow up on what Ellen said, even of a precursor to the May 12th reports, next week's tour through Kansas, to see what kind of an insight we get out of those people as they look at the wheat. From a bigger perspective, and it kind of fits hand in hand with the lower dollar itself, I think we're seeing a slow transition of big money, maybe from equities around the world back over into commodities.
Oh, that's an interesting one. I like following up on that one. Mike Zuzalo, please.
Well, kind of picking up with the dollar, Todd, I think, you know, the shorts in the market right now, especially with unlimited risk positions, probably need to take note of the fact that as we head into this week and the end of this week, not only are we looking at maybe a medium-term sell signal in the dollar, we've also seen medium-term buy signals pop up through the oscillators, and not just the CRB, but also the S&P Goldman Sachs Commodity Index, as well as the Bloomberg Commodity Index. So while the agriculture sector, especially the grain market, isn't really showing that, the other commodity complexes are coming together pretty nicely, and I really thought it was impressive as related to ethanol, eventually, that unleaded gas and lead month futures climbed above its 200-day moving average on a close for the first time since July of last year. So shorts in the market with short calls or short futures probably would want to take note of this and be ready to react if we'd see follow-through as we broke into the month of May.
And Steve Freed from Chicago, Illinois, your list.
Well, I guess top of my list always is weather, and that we really don't have any problems globally, which kind of limits some of the funds from covering shorts and actually has them increasing some of their sale positions. And then I think in general, the farmers not selling. We're looking at the biggest drop in net farm income since the Depression, and just trying to figure out what they're going to do, not only with new crop, but the old crop they have left to sell.
Hadn't realized that. How concerning is that to you and the company in general at ADM?
Well, I'm always speaking for myself. You know, I think as the market, you know, we're having to do a lot of the work with the basis, and taking some of the carry out of the market to get some of the stored grain moved. I think the market assumes that the farmer will sell it, and once he knows that he's got a crop. But you know, I just think it puts a lot of pressure on the basis and spreads to do some of the work of moving the grain rather than the futures.
Has the basis, Dale Durkles, been able to lift the marketplace? It seems like it's held really strong all the way through this process. And I'm wondering, on a second thought, following up with an article that Daryl Good penned earlier in the week, suggesting that maybe there's not enough risk premium for new crop corn.
You know, on Daryl's comment about not enough risk premium, I generally agree with that at this point, and part of that comes back from some cyclic work that I do. I took a long look at it last week, some longer-term cycles, and really came to grips with the idea that last fall's low was indeed a 5.5-year low in the corn market itself, and everything we've been going through in the winter months themselves really and into now has really been a correction of that to the downside. And it's a matter of, you know, when we finally see the market come together to get this market turned back higher again. What you're talking about as far as basis and spreads, and Steve mentioned it as well, you know, that is really, they are having to do the work of trying to entice farmers to move some grain at this point. Unfortunately, right now, with, you know, planting activity going on and prices, you know, what I'll say, somewhat lukewarm, you know, farmers really aren't going to be enticed to really making many sales, at least across the next 3 to 5 weeks at this point. So, you know, the cash market itself is kind of stuck.
Ellen Dearden, when you talk to producers, and I suspect that's less often this week than you have for a while because they're in the field, are they still unwilling really to open up the grain bin doors? I think most everybody has said we need to get rid of old crop corn.
Most everybody says we have a lot of old crop corn, and the ones that get me very nervous are the ones that have it all on farm, because I could see it go out of condition rather quickly with the up and down temperatures that we look like we have ahead of us. I am getting some guys that are interested in selling a little bit of old crop corn. They were interested in selling old crop beans this week when the cash bean price of processors went over $10, but they really want $4 for old crop corn, and I think they're willing to, at this stage of the game, to say they're not going to do any selling for a bit.
Is everybody in agreement with that, that producers really are thinking we want $4 for our corn that's in the bin and they're not going to move it until then? And what do you suppose the chances are that'll happen between now and the time that they're forced to clean those bins out? Mike, we'll start with you, Zuzalo.
Yeah, I guess I feel generally that's right, Todd, but I do feel like there's going to be some cash flow sales that are going to have to be made by the time we get to the middle of May, late May time period. I don't think the elevators want to keep rolling this for producers. I don't think they probably will keep rolling this for producers. And producers, I think, are probably tired of paying the roll at this stage of the game. And I've had a lot more conversations with producers that, especially those that have held on a little bit more on the cash than recommended, that they're willing to dump it and then, you know, call them first thing when it's ready to buy it back. So I think this is one of those scenarios where, if you've been around the markets a little bit of time, you realize that you can't have a really good solid rally, whether it's cash led and especially if it's futures led, and especially in today's fund environment, and as Steve talked about, speculative environment, without, you know, getting it out of the farmer's hands first, because that is very germane and very important to the market as a whole. So I do see some daylight as far as letting some corn get out of the hands of the farmer in the next 30 days, and I don't think they'll hold it all the way to the fall. I would also say it's going to be real important for them to probably adjust their basis play. If the futures market bottoms, don't count on the basis to keep improving would be my take, because the unwinding of that basis futures play is probably going to take effect once we see the funds start to cover their shorts.
Now, I didn't hear you say that cash would make it to $4, so I'm going to guess that that's not...
No, I said I agree with you. I think that's what they want, but I don't think they're going to wait forever for $4.
Okay.
You know what? You know, this is Dale. You know what? Both Steve said early when we started out, and what Mike was mentioning there, you know, really brings into mind, you know, producers out there really need to step back at this point in time and really consider somehow getting the basis tied up. Because, you know, if we do eventually get into a rally in the market, and I think we will, you know, we're going to see, because of the inventories of old crop that are going to have to be moved yet, cash is not going to keep pace with paper, and so we are going to lose on basis. So putting grain on a basis contract of some kind, depending on the contract, or rolling from a physical ownership to a paper ownership, to me is an astute, intelligent marketing move here now, and one that will still be offered, I think, over the next number of weeks yet.
I think it will be offered over the next couple of weeks, but it looks to me like it's going to come with a little higher fee than what we've seen in the past. The thing that gets me worried about old crop corn is that typically we have seen a board move up and a basis move up in the summer. And I think there's an awful lot of guys that are figuring that that play is still, you know, logical for 2015. And I think there's just too much old crop corn sitting around in the country to have that squeeze as we get into mid-July, August time frame. For both those, the board and the basis to improve.
A question on that for all of you from Mike. Analytically, I think that was probably due to the tighter inventories versus what the USDA was reporting on the grain stocks, at least the last couple of years. Do you all, I can't get a beat on it because I still feel as though maybe the demand's a little bit better or the crop was a little bit smaller versus what the grain stocks. I'd like to know how you guys feel, and Ellen, how you feel about the grain stock side of the equation. Is it bigger, or has USDA got it right, or is it smaller?
I think it's a little bit smaller, but I fully expect that on this May report that USDA is going to come out with a larger carryout to try to be convincing that their March stocks report number was good.
Why do you think the March stocks report wasn't good? Or why do you think they don't think it wasn't good?
I think they do believe that it was good, and I think they're going to try to defend that. I expect that the livestock feeding was really better than what they're carrying at this
point. And going back to some of the work that Daryl and Scott and John did, you know, and looking at, you know, the historical relationship between first half feed and residual consumption in a marketing year and last half feed and residual consumption in a marketing year. I mean, it's real easy to defend that March stocks number and suggesting, you know, that the demand here in the summer period may end up being maybe a little bit more robust than it's been the last few years. Now, I'm just not so certain they're going to make too many changes as far as their feed and residual at this point.
And so just to jump in and to clarify what their thought was, that was in the new era, we have been generally in first and second quarter showing usage at a quicker pace than we did in the previous era more than 5 years ago. And so the expectation from maybe Scott and Daryl in particular is that we might look this year more like we did in that time frame than we did
in
the last 5 years.
90s even. You know, and there's a lot of reason to think that when you think about the fact of we've had to use, and it's been fairly modern, this big crop in the South, and we've been forced in here a number of years using that crop more aggressively. Well, technically that gets counted as new crop usage, but yet it gets consumed in the old crop period and displaces old crop demand. So, you know, there's that, and there's some other things that fit along that bill that suggest maybe we are going back to what we were prior to 2006, 2007.
Steve Fried, your thoughts on the grain stocks numbers?
Well, I guess I'll make three comments. Number one is corn market is probably one of the few markets that shows a carry, and it would suggest to me that, you know, there are stocks out there. You know, and number two, this last week or so, we've been seeing a lot of farmers asking the question, how low is low in some of these prices, especially Dease corn, and I think they're getting a little, don't want to use the word panicky, but I think they're getting a little nervous about they've got grain to sell. And then as far as the stocks report is concerned, I think the USDA openly admits that it's really struggling with estimating corn stocks because they don't count corn in transit. And since we've introduced ethanol and the 5 billion bushels, there's a lot of corn in transit. So, you know, we continue to see a floating number between 2 and 400 million bushels that either pops up out of nowhere or is lost out of nowhere. And I think it has a lot to do with the methodology that the USDA does in corn stocks, that they don't count corn in transit.
Different topic. And Steve, I'd like to stay with you on this one just to get kind of a feel for the issue. I made note that none of you put on the list avian flu. Now, we talk about it a lot in the news, and we have talked about it on our commodity programs, but understanding that the large number of birds that we hear about doesn't generally calculate into that large number of bushels. Does it mean not so much to the marketplace, and could it, Steve?
Well, I think that obviously it's a regional problem in Iowa and Minnesota, and you know, you are seeing spot areas in which meal is being canceled and things like that. The numbers, you know, well, so far the effect is it's less than 1% of the annual production. So, you know, as far as the market is concerned, I don't think the market is concerned. And then I think, and I'm not an expert on this, but somebody said over 76 degrees is kind of a temperature in which they hope the virus will stop spreading. And so as we wrap up temperatures, hopefully we won't get any further spreading.
Ellen Dearden, you mentioned the dollar. What issues do you have there?
Well, we've just continued to slide down on this dollar. And, you know, there was talk, you know, in January, February, March, that we weren't going to stop till we went to 102 to 104. And now we're back considerably from that. And if you look from a technical standpoint, we've got a little double top here on the charts. And it looks to me like a 50% retracement has moved from the March high a little over 100 to the low we put in May last year at 78.91. The 50% retracement of that's 89.65, and that's quite a bit lower than where we are right now.
Mike Zuzlow, you want to jump in? This has turned lower, and you say there's a sell signal there.
Well, if we finish the end of the week, I think below that 95.50, 95.75 area in the June index, then it should stimulate a medium-term sell signal. And I like what Ellen talked about with that double top formation. And what I really like is that the interest rates and the yields are starting to come up in the bond markets, which that makes sense fundamentally, that the trade is starting to realize that maybe the United States is overdone in terms of currency appreciation. And the other thing, as I mentioned at the top of the show, was the major commodity indices on a monthly basis are starting to show some life on the oscillators, and I think that's something that's we've been waiting for you know, probably like Dale was talking about, ever since the corn low was made. And if that is a 5-year low, then we've been waiting, you know, what, a year or almost a year for that to turn. And I think the wheat, first of all, to get back to your avian flu issue, I do think that if you would go to a commercial broiler flock, as far as expanding the virus in the commercial broiler flock instead of just the hens that lay eggs or the layer flock, I think that would increase the importance dramatically, both in terms of future feed loss and also in terms of how the market sees it. Todd, that's kind of the differentiation that I've kind of picked out in terms of what I've been hearing and what I've been seeing and who I've been talking to. I think it's really important at this stage of the game that the trade understands that some of these countries like South Korea, if you go on the list of not being able to get broiler meat from the United States, you're going to be out for 6 months straight until you're virus-free for 6 months straight. So while the Bunge CEO said today that the meal demand is not being materially affected, quote-unquote, I think the future demand could very much be affected if we get into the broilers.
So there is one flock of broilers in Iowa that may be infected. They're checking at this point, but they think that might be the case. It's a small flock, 19,000. We'll be, of course, keeping track of it as well. I want to stay with the dollar and the money just a little bit. Dale, you mentioned big money moving back into the commodities. Why is that the case?
Just, and I don't try to pass myself off as a great currency analyst, and
I think all of us probably would not do that other than trying to look at some technical parameters, because of all markets it is difficult to analyze, it is the currencies because of the multitude of variables to deal with. But when you look at the dollar itself and you start really thinking about it and where we had come from and where we had ended up here, you know, we were down in the 70s and we ended up right at 100, psychologically kind of interesting for the dollar index. But currency market, just like every other market, ends up getting speculative excess built into it. And you really kind of wonder if we really hadn't finally run out of gas on that regard. And that's why the dollar has started to stall out. And now you got people flipping around what Mike said there about rates starting to go up. It's especially interesting when you look at rates elsewhere around the world starting to go up. This week we were talking about higher rates for bonds in Germany. The Brazilians raised their discount rate at this point in time. So, you know, that all tends to support other currencies, weaken the dollar itself. One thing that's been long mentioned, because the U.S. stock market has generally outperformed stock markets for the most part around the world, and our economy has generally been stronger than some of those around the world, that you aren't wondering if some of this money that's in the U.S. equity market, and now with the with our stock market starting to stall and getting a bit softer looking at this point, if we aren't going to see some of this money that's been from elsewhere in the world invested in the U.S. here the last number of years start to go home, which means they're going to be selling dollars and buying whatever currency it may be, and that further weakens it as well. So a lot of things. Looking at commodity indices, which Mike apparently had dropped off when I made comment at the top of the show, and I've been watching those. It was interesting, Barclays Capital in London back at the first of the year, for the first time in over 2 years, had noticed that we had seen investment money start to flow into commodity assets. It wasn't a big move. In the first quarter, we actually had, according to the data they compile, we had seen a bit of movement of money into commodities at that point in time. And so it looks like if we're getting to a point with equities being high, commodities generally being low, we were at a point where we could possibly see a transition. And I'm not saying we create a major bull in commodities and a major break in equities, but I think we're going to find those go back to a more reasonable balance. And so that probably is going to help fuel the movement of money into commodities. And this fits in the CRB, or the old CRB index, and it fits with the Goldman Sachs. It fits with the new CRB. There's a long history of having a cycle that's about 3 years in length, low to low, and we've been in this window for the last few months. So we're at a point there from a cyclic standpoint. And when you look at the levels that the continuous commodity index or the CRB or the Goldman Sachs commodity index got to, you know, it's all an attractive place to start pulling money back into them. And I think that's really where we're starting to see a shift occurring. Now, it doesn't mean we're going to take off right away, but I think it generally suggests we are going to see a lift. Look at crude oil. We're up almost at $60 a barrel, you know, and we go back just a couple of months ago, we were in the mid-40s, and everybody was going, is it going to 35? Is it going to 40? Things change, and it's mainly a psychological game when you get to the extremes, and to me, that's what's going on when you look at equities, when you look at commodities, when you look at currencies, is that we've probably pushed them to an extreme, and now we're seeing things start to change.
We have covered a lot of ground to this point, and it seems to me a little different for Commodity Week, because most of it has to do with outside markets, outside influence that not maybe directly involved with the production of corn, soybeans, and wheat. Is it because, and Steve Fried, you mentioned this at the top of the program, that there really aren't any problems globally with supply?
I would say that's part of it. You know, obviously, if there was a weather problem somewhere, we would be trading it. But I also think that the markets have become very global, and every day you come in and you try to look and see if there's any news about the economy, not only here but in Asia and also in Europe, and then you look at where the dollar is, and then you look at where the money flow is, and then you finally get to weather and where the cash basis level is. So I mean, there's just a lot of things that we tend to look at in price discovery. And really, you know, it when we started out 2015, everyone was pretty much saying it was going to be tough to have another back-to-back perfect global weather year, and but so far, things have kind of, except for some issues in the Dakotas, it's falling into place that things are pretty good right now. And I think that that is reducing the amount of speculative interest in buying grains.
What is your view, Steve, of new crop corn and soybean prices here going into the middle of the summer months, given normal growing conditions?
Well, I think that there certainly is a lot of people up here that feel that soybean prices need to go a lot lower than they are now. The problem is that they're all paying margin calls because the market hasn't broken as much as people thought. I think, you know, when you sit down and look at the May 12th report, the government should raise next year's carryout, you know, to let's pick a number, 410, maybe 420, and usually at that price, you've got prices below 950. The strange thing about it is when you look at the No-15, No-16 spread, it's only a 3-cent carry. And historically, when you go back and look at years that U.S. carryout's been over 400, it's been a 30-cent carry. So, you know, you just kind of try to figure out, is it because the demand is so strong that, you know, China's pricing the market every time we get down close to 960? Is it because, in general, the farmers are not selling? Is it because some global traders use those spreads on unpriced crush? Is it because it may be a cheap way to be long the market versus high premium calls? So, I mean, then you look at corn and it's in a carry. And, you know, I think a lot of people still believe that corn's in the 350-450 trading range depending upon the weather, and that beans are too high relatively speaking. But I think you just have to try to get past let's pick a date, June 1, and make sure that there's no change in the weather before maybe we start trading the fact that on June 1 you'll have a record amount of soybeans in the world.
Do you think beans are too high?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. But I'm paying margin calls.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I can't trade. But I think that, you know, everyone up here is thinking the same thing, that soybean prices are at least a dollar overpriced and they just won't break.
I, for one, think soybeans are fairly priced generally. You know, the low we put in last fall at a little over $9 on the board, I think was getting down close to an extreme. Beans were in a window then to put in a 3-year low. We've got a 2-year low coming sometime this year, so we could soften up at some point here if, in fact, we have a good crop. One thing that I put together a long time ago now, and I'm talking years ago, is looking at a 6-month S&D for the 3 major exporters, and looking at U.S., Argentina, Brazil. And it's interesting looking at the potential ending stocks at the end of this summer compared to the usage we could arguably have. And I'm not a lot different from where the trade seems to be right now. My stock's use of the 3 major exporters is actually not quite as high as it was in 2010, and we were trading roughly a $9 market. You know, and I think people are really struggling with the idea, you know, look at it. We had a super crop here a year ago. We're having a good crop in Brazil and a record crop in Argentina. You know, and when you look at the grains, the wheat and the coarse grains around the world, the last 2 years we had not only record yields, but a record departure from trend on those yields. The point, I think, the market needs to start thinking about, and this goes back into the comment you made early, Todd, about risk premium. What are the odds we do that again next year? And, you know, we aren't working with burdensome supplies like we had back in the early 2000s or burdensome supplies certainly like we had back in the middle 1980s. And I think people really need to step back and look at a long picture and understand sometimes just exactly where we are in the price picture. Get away from this short-term day-to-day stuff.
I think we've gotten into the mentality, the just-in-time demand mentality that manufacturing took. And I think that has entered into this grain market as well. And so as long as we have enough to serve us on the short term, when I want it, where I want it, I'm good. And therefore, the bean looks a little more iffy than does corn, because corn supplies are spread out all over the place. Wheat supplies are spread out all over the place. But bean supplies right now are pretty much centered in South America.
Mike Zuzulo, I want you to take up, because 2010 has been a recurring theme through the program. I know you think that this is an analogous year. Do we still stand in that in the midst of a 2010-like year, from your opinion?
Yeah, and I think the comments this, you know, Commodity Week program would support that, with the idea of the longer-term charts turning, the idea that, the like Steve was talking about, that the weather is ideal at this stage when we get planted safely, and we plant as we trade in the planting time period. We pressure the market lower, and then we also have the dollar and the commodity indices working what they work. And the analogy for me really just goes right back to laying the chart prices and the daily ticks over the different, you know, years, and it comes up very, very close in terms of both pattern and actual price. And now in 2010, we had a big shift in USDA from June to August when it came to the world wheat ending stocks. It wasn't the U.S. crop that brought us out so much. It was that they cut the world wheat ending stocks, mainly because of Europe, about 10% from June to July. And so while we were running 190 plus million tons for world wheat ending stocks in June of 2010, much like we are right now, we got that down below 180, and that seemed to, along with some other features to the market, you know, put a nice low in place. And after the June-July time period, both Nov beans and Dease corn never really looked back. And I sure hope that's the case, because going back to the financial situation of the farmer, I think it's going to be extremely troubling for them if that lower price, this situation, pushes itself out into 2016. That's when I'll start to get very, very nervous on the financial health of the producer. And I would just say one thing about the soybeans. A big thing that has kept the beans, I think, aloft and the spread between beans and corn, other than what Steve talked about, has been the Argentine farmer, the Brazilian farmer, both have been holding on to their bean supplies. They've been held captive. And I think it is greatly influenced by the currency markets once again. And so, like Dale was talking about, the currency markets are a multifaceted, peel the onion back type onion, you know, when it comes to strategies and understanding them. And I think here again, we've got a captive supply that if the dollar would turn back lower and the real and the peso would go back up, I wonder if that wouldn't let go of a lot of beans. So that's why I still feel more nervous about the downside than I do the corn and when it comes to new crop beans.
Okay, as we wrap up, I think I'd like each of you to let producers know, because they're captive for sure in their planters and the tractors, and they're definitely listening. What is it that they should be considering, either about the old crop corn they have in their bin and or new crop sales for corn and or soybeans? Dale Durkles.
First off, with old crop corn at this point, I'd say get the basis tied up. To me, that's paramount at this juncture, because if we do get strength, cash won't keep pace with board. With new crop corn, you know, I'm being patient yet, because I have a lot of time to market this crop. Yes, I do have cash flow needs, but I can manage that through some other marketing tools at this point. But if we're down near the low end of the range, I don't see any reason to price anything. And beans, I feel the same story. One of the things I think we didn't talk about today is really the total number of acres that are going to get planted here. I've long said that, you know, we are not going to get the bean acres everybody thinks, and low prices into planting corn and beans both, and even wheat sure doesn't argue planting low quality land. And I think we're going to see some losses there that could make the acreage number at the end of June friendly.
Steve Freed.
Well, I guess a lot of it depends on, you know, if you own your land or if you're renting it, and then what kind of other bills you have. But I'm a believer of selling beans and you know, maybe or buying a put. And then if you do sell the cash, replace it with a call or something in case the weather changes. Corn, I'm just kind of stuck because I kind of go back to October when the funds bought corn and we're talking about lower acres and a trend yield and lower carryout. And I think that we still have to play that card. But I think that everybody says the same thing. You know, if nearby corn was to get back closer to $4, you need to probably sell that, and that would probably put, you know, Dease somewhere in the 420, 430 area. You probably would want to sell that too. But right now it doesn't feel like we'll ever see that, but that would be a plan.
Ellen Dearden.
420 to 430 rings my bell on Dease corn. Old crop corn, I'm extremely worried about it. So I have been buying the Dease and selling the July corn on spreads for guys that I cannot force into making sales. New crop bean sales, I think for the guy who hasn't sold anything, this 960 to 970 is a place you've got to do something and hope that you've got opportunities up close to $10.
Mike Zuzula?
You know, we set the weekly low in Dease corn at around 380 this week, Todd. I think that's within about 30 cents of the major downside for the next several months. I cannot say that analytically based upon the weekly low of 949 in November beans. So like Steve, I'm a little bit more eager to get beans hedged. I think you do it wisely and conservatively with a lot of paper positions that you can pull off. I think the other thing that Ellen and Dale both talked about in the old crop corn needs to resonate with producers, that basis is likely to falter if futures markets bottom here, because we don't have the demand that we had last year at this time, and because we are still literally almost record net short by the speculators in the agriculture commodities right now. So a lot different market right now than it was a year ago, and I think those are the two major things to watch out for.
That's Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Our other guests today included Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Steve Freed of ADM Investor Services in Chicago, Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Have a good week in the field.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.